All right. I know you're all just waiting. Like, what did the weight do? Oh my God, I can't take it.
What's the resonant frequency of the pillow?
Yeah, it's 0.05 hertz. Yeah, and so I got this wacky idea. You know, hey, what happens if you put the mid-range on a weight so that I couldn't quite get to 1,000 times the cone weight? Because anyway, I have to lift this thing. So I think I got to about 400 with that barbell that I got from Walmart for $16.
Amazing.
And look at what happens to the frequency response. Have you ever seen anything so beautiful?
That's the weight, right?
That's what it's sitting on, the weight.
Oh.
And it just...
It's the only difference.
Got rid of some stuff.
Is it magnetically coupled with the magnet?
Yeah, because it's iron or steel or whatever. Wow. Probably some depleted uranium. What do they have laying around the giant? So, there's still this ugly, ugly 1 dB ripple in here that I got to figure out. I'm pretty sure that's the surround always does something.
Yeah. I thought I heard that from uranium.
Yeah, see? It's really horrible and objectionable. So we just
calculate out the frequency that appears, then that'll tell you from the center of the cone out about where it would be.
Yeah.
Well, you may find out that it's right where your surround is. So
yeah, there's a neat thing you can do with a strobe light, where you can this guy who sells Leap software. He also sells a strobe light, where I'm thinking I'll probably make one for $5 myself. Just blink an LED with a microprocessor and take some pictures with a video camera, and it'll get it eventually. And you can just change the frequencies and look to see where you see ripples start forming in your surround. Not that I'm smart enough to figure out the structural thing I got to do to fix that, but, you know, maybe you could go put some glue on it. I don't know. Screw it up.
Yeah, you've got to find out where it's at before you figure out how to fix it.
Yeah, start with the first thing. Yeah.
Which driver is this again, the mid-range?
This is the mid-range, yeah. Okay.
And its operating range is?
So 150 to 700. And so this is actually with the crossover. Yeah, this was with some crossover.
It has to be, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't quite working perfectly, but it's got a crossover in there because it's down so many dB. It should have been down more than that.
Still damn good.
But it's doing something. And the other thing to note is, look at the distortion. Here we are, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 5, before we get to the first distortion product. That's a really nice driver for not too much money. A
was
lot
the
of them.
The 700 hertz was the 3 dB points at the...
Yeah, 6 dB.
Oh, 6. Oh,
yes, because they add up to be, yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's why this didn't quite look right for 700 hertz, but yeah. And that's how you do it. And the interesting thing, it took me about a solid 7 minutes of running the saw to get through that thing with one of those blades that's... what is it? Fiber blade, I think they call it. I got a video of this thing. It shoots sparks and they all land right here, and it deposited steel right there. There's a little volcano right there of steel. It's amazing. And there it is when you stuff the thing into the enclosure. So there's this. And the foam in the enclosure is actually pushing it back against the driver as well. So,
but it's the magnet that sticks it on.
And the magnet also sticks it. I think ultimately I'm going to put some of that brake damping grease in there, because I want to be able to pull the driver out. And it'd be nice to have something that, if you've ever done a brake job, there's this grease you buy. It's really thick and sticky. And it seems like it's probably the perfect product to just put a little blob on there so it'll really just tack it on there. And it'll come off if you work on it, but it won't. And so there's my response with the weight in the box, and it's still looking pretty good. Probably some things going on with the box. I mean, because obviously my model of the structure of this box is ridiculously oversimplified, right? With my, it's just a bunch of these plates. Well, it's not. So there's probably some more that could be done to kill off. And this was without the crossover, so you could see the driver's breakup mode and everything. All right, so great. Now we got tweeters and a mid-range. It kind of stops at 90 hertz. I was hoping to do a two-way design. Wouldn't that have been simpler for life and I could be done? No, these guys are bringing 18-inch woofers. Howard's been talking about 18-inch woofers for a month. I'm going to get wiped out. I want 30 hertz bass. I want to move a lot of air with a box I can lift. How am I going to do that? So this is a kind of a curious problem. You know, so I thought, well, I'll come up with a criteria. So I came up with this criteria. I call it my volume efficiency factor. I just invented that. Maybe somebody else did. What? Somebody else did. I just don't know about it. But it's the volume of the cone sweeps at X max divided by the volume of the box. So it's how much sound you get for how much box you need. I thought that's kind of a neat thing because there's a big variation in that. Here it is right here. So I scaled it so it'd be in this nice range. It's not, I don't know, I guess it's cubic centimeters per liter, you know, arbitrary. But it's volume that the cone moves, air divided by volume of the box. And so you come, gosh, let's go find one that's really bad. 3. Oh, look at that! There's my expensive C's driver. Wants an enormous box. Who wants to carry that around? What was the other one? Oh, gosh, I don't know if it's on the list, but the first woofer I used was this, it was a Hi-Vi. I can't find it on the list. But anyway, it was another one that wanted an enormous box. And so...
the one just below the Dayton is a Hi-Vi.
Yeah.
It's a 3.6.
Yeah.
The darker well, there's a Dayton up below the top that's also 3.9.
Yeah. And so the other parameter I'm interested in is how low can I go? Because this is going to be it's a passive crossover. I can't just... I mean, the easiest thing in the world is to build a modern woofer and just put an amp in there and equalize it. You don't need a big box. But if you're going to just work with a passive crossover, you got to live with what you got. Can't fix the bass. So the box resonant frequency. So I sorted them according to, gosh, did I not get this? Where is it? There was a how low it goes. I guess that's it. So I sorted on this. Yeah, 25, it goes up to 89. So you start at the top, you start clicking down, you go, gosh, I'll go a little higher, go a little higher, go a little higher. And this is just the sealed, if you did the sealed configuration. So eventually that's what I wanted. And then you go, well, all right, as I'm going down this list, when does my volume efficiency get up to a pretty good number? Boy, look at that thing there. But these are discontinued. Yeah. Like a lot of these were discontinued, or the one I was really interested in was out of stock until October.
Yeah.
So we go over to Mattisound and we give them $250 and we get two of these. And here's the spec for it. It's a really neat deal. 25 millimeters of linear throw. That is a full inch. And then if you do the vent, you get down to 27 hertz. So that's right down where I wanted to be. And the only thing I didn't care for, well, the 4 ohm is actually helpful for the passive crossover because your coils can be half as small as the 8 ohm crossover coils. So kind of an interesting thing. And then we go do the same. We just repeat. Let's go put in the cube size and to get the volume that the manufacturer, I just strictly followed the manufacturer recommendation for the volume in the port, just like, I'm out of time, I got 3 days left of the contest, let's do this thing.
It's easier towards the end of
it. It is. And so this nicely came out up here at 400 hertz, so that's way out. I'm going to cross this sucker over to 150 hertz. So I'll be, you know, that's an octave and a half. Yeah, good times. And my panel resonances for that size was actually pretty high. And so then, of course, there's a brace in there that cut the panel size in half, so I got up above that. But 372, cut off at 150, we're good octave, and it's probably higher than that. So cube shape, maximize the frequency of your Helmholtz resonance, maximize your panel resonances. Here's the first cut at the box, and you can see the great big bass and brace in there. All right, what's left? Crossover. What a nightmare. How are we going to do that? God. Well, okay. What matters? You don't want to hear it. ideally, it should just go from one driver to the next, and it shouldn't add or take away anything. That's tricky to do. Let's do some modeling. Let's do some simulation. Let's listen to the simulation. Listen to the simulation. So if you are familiar with Octave and you have any interest in doing that, I have a script that lets you do that, where you can actually make a model of your speaker, and then it becomes a filter. And then you can run music through it, and you can listen to the music like it was coming out of your speakers before you bought or built anything. I don't go into that.
You want to make sure that the speaker you're listening to, the simulating the speaker, is good enough to give you what you want.
Yeah.
How about headphones? Wouldn't that be the way to go?
Yeah, so you listen to it on the headphones. Yeah. And it's kind of neat. So this guy wrote a nice paper about virtual model to enable real-time listening tests of crossovers. So he did a scientific study, an actual double-blind listening test with a large sample of people, and he said, what is audible in a crossover? What order? Do I need a fourth order? Do I need an eighth order? And at the typical 3,500 hertz, he found that eighth order crossovers, if they were Linkwitz Riley, were inaudible. People couldn't tell they were there.
Eighth order, 48 dB.
Yeah. And that's difficult to achieve in a passive crossover. So we're going to have to do something else, folks. Well, luckily, so this is, he has this graph in his paper. I wrote the script to do the same things he said he did in the paper. Unfortunately, he didn't publish the script. Makes me nuts. Anyway, but I managed to match it with a half a day's work, so not a big deal. And I got the exact same plot he got. And I'm like, yes, okay, I can do this. I did this. And what it shows you, so this was the fourth order Linkwitz-Riley, which was somewhat audible up at this frequency. And what he's modeling is he's got a 5.6-inch offset. So the idea is that the tweeters are closer to you than the midrange by 5.6 inches. Because the acoustic center of this thing is somewhere about there in the cone, right? It's not the front, it's not the back, it's somewhere in the middle, acoustic center. And so because the sounds from the two things get to you and they've traveled different distances, because of the particular frequency you're looking at, 3,500 hertz, well, you're getting into a pretty big phase. Phase is where you are on the wave, and if you get all the way to the bottom side of the wave and it adds to the top, it nulls. So that means you had 180 degrees out of phase because of that 5 inches at that frequency. So good grief, it wiped out that note. And the real trouble comes from the width of this.
Yeah.
So you go, oh, okay, if that was really, really narrow, that's what the eighth order does. It goes down just as far, the eighth order. But that is half as wide or less because of the higher, the steeper filter slopes. And how wide is that? I was going to see if we could figure it out here. That is 1,000, 2,000, 3. It's 1,000 hertz wide. Mm. It's pretty wide. That's why it's audible. And it's down 10 dB. I don't know, something, you know, 8 dB, it's a pretty good suck out.
But so, it's the phase that's doing it.
And the phase is what does it. So hopefully that. So what if instead of crossing over up there, we crossed over at 800 hertz? Now what happens? Well, 800 hertz, the wavelengths are much longer. And just because I knew I wasn't going to have that huge offset, maybe I'm going to have 2.6 inches of offset. 800 hertz, fourth order. What happens?
Where are you coming up with your offset? What is that?
Well, that's because the cone is back in, whereas these cones are up almost flush
surface, yeah.
With the surface. So if I stand right here, it has to travel farther from this one because it's recessed, effectively.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you saying, and that differential is 2.6 inches?
That would be a worst case, kind of, if I'm off axes. It's also, so there's two things. There's what you start with, and then there's as you change angle vertically, you will get because of that, right?
Okay.
So if you can tolerate 2.6 inches and not hear it, you're doing really good, right? I mean, you've probably gone through pretty wide angles. Life is good. So unfortunately, I messed up. I didn't get this on the same scale, because if this was on that 50 dB scale, it would look like one of those, right? That's 50 dB. I go over here, I go to this one. This is 1.5 dB. Good luck. I don't know. Can you tell?
No.
We're probably approaching inaudible, right? So that's a near perfect crossover. Because, and why? Just because, well, for its fourth order link with Riley, which sums perfectly, I had to test it. I did the math with the software, not actually did the math, but with the software. And I thought, I got this plot where I basically said, well, I'm going to just put the woofer and the tweeter and some of them together again, and it should be a straight line. I got this plot, and I looked at it, and I went, oh, crap, I did it all wrong. Look at how big that is. Look at how big. Oh, that's 2⁻⁹. Auto-scaling, make you look silly. So, yeah, so that math of the fourth order link with Riley just sums perfectly, and that's why that's such a great thing. There's some phase shift, but in the gain domain, I guess you'd say. This was just to show that you can model the impulse response for your whole speaker, and this is what I was talking about earlier. You can take this impulse response, so after you've modeled your filters and your speakers, if you have the impulse responses of them, you can feed them through your software crossover. You get the impulse response for the whole system, and then you can use that as a filter to let you listen to your system before you build it. But that's basically the idea. So the idea, yeah, I kind of already hit this. You want the high order crossover to minimize the overlap. The link widths look great. The notch that it ends up with is related to the frequencies. Low frequency helps you a lot. So my 700 hertz crossover was one of the beauties of it. You could, if you're living large and loving life, you can get yourself an active crossover. Where'd my active crossover go? Here it is. These things are so cheap now. So here's a active crossover you can buy for a couple $100, and it's got a digital signal processor in there, and it will run any order crossover you want, practically. Eighth, 16th, I don't know where it runs out. It'll run like a couple thousand tap filter. So that's by far the easiest thing to do.
What brand is it?
And this is called a mini DSP. And there's several other ones. There are some high-end ones out there now that you can spend $5,000 on. I don't know why you would. This will work the same. But if you want a really pretty one. Or you can go do the passive thing, so that allows you to kind of work with the hobbyist that wants to pick his amplifier and things like that. Modeling, all right. So this is kind of, we're getting towards the end. This is Box Sim by Visiton. Visiton's a driver manufacturer. They sell some of their drivers through Parts Express.
European, English, I believe, company.
Yeah. And so this software lets you really do a nice job of modeling your speaker. You can put, I think, 8 drivers in there. You can have 8 amplifiers. You can either have active crossovers or passive crossovers, whatever you want. I'm just going to quickly go through some of the screens in here. This is the frequency response. It shows you the total for the system. It shows you the individual drivers. This shows you some of the trouble you have. Gee, how are my crossovers doing that? Well, it's because it's a passive crossover and they're hard to design. The trick to this software, it's completely free, but it doesn't. Everything in the library is from Visiton. Which makes sense. They're paying for it. But you can put in one of their drivers, and then you can just overwrite the parameters with the parameters from your driver. So you can't save it to the library, but you can save the project. Problem solved. So I just went in and I put in my date and reference parameters, And it's neat because you can put in the field small parameters, which we talked about earlier. You can, and you can also load in the actual frequency response, gain and phase for the driver. A lot of those Dayton drivers, they have that. You can just download them, put them in there. You can also put in the impedance response so that you're not relying on these. This is a linear model. This gets to all the nonlinearities, different bumps and whatever that's in the driver that wouldn't show up. Field small only handles the low end. This actually handles the whole response of the driver. Then you tell it about the enclosure. It comes up with a complex fit for the impedance, so it's not just modeling it as one coil. And so you can tell if it's integrated enclosure or sealed or bandpass or vented. So you can do all of that right in this software. You tell it where your drivers are on the baffle, because it actually is going to do baffle calculations, baffle diffraction. And then you can put in your schematic for your crossover. If it's, you go, oh my God, there's your crossover. There's my crossover. So this was the fourth order Linkwitz-Riley going between the tweeter and the mid-range, and then second order between the mid-range and the woofer. And then those don't work unless you compensate the impedance of the drivers. Because the impedance of the drivers go up and down all over the place, and the crossovers are designed around having a flat impedance, if that makes any sense. You go in, you put your part in. There's a little checkbox down here you'll see. It says optimized part. What's that? Well, there's an optimizer built into this thing. You can tell it which parts you want to let it adjust, and it will go and optimize the value of those to flatten the frequency response or fix the phase. And we'll get to that here in a second. So if you don't know how to design filters, it's got this. You just put in the frequencies, the resistance at the crossover. So you go look at that measured impedance of your driver, because it'll say it's 8 ohms. But where you're crossing it over, it might be 6. It could be anything. So you go find that out. And then it goes, and here's a bunch of these. So you don't really have to know that much. You just put it together like that in your schematic. Put those part values in, and you're going to be doing all right. And then, as I said, those drivers don't have a flat frequency flat impedance with frequency response. This helps you compensate that. You put some driver parameters in here. Now, these are when the driver's in its cabinet. It's not the ones from the manufacturer, because it's different. As soon as you put it in the cabinet, you've got a volume behind it. It's got a different resonant frequency. It's got a different Q, which is how high the impedance peaks. So you go find those parameters, you stick it in there, and then this tells you how to compensate for. This is compensating the high frequency end, where the impedance goes up because there's a coil. Coil impedance goes up with frequency. And then this is compensating the resonance, which is at the low end, where the impedance will go up in a little mountain. And then this is if you do both. So if you're doing a mid-range, you need both. If you do the tweeter, you probably need the lower end, and the woofer, you need the upper end. Anyway, probably a lot to digest. But here is me compensating my, I can't see which driver it is. But anyway, me compensating a driver. A driver that has an impedance or a resonance at 90, this is probably my mid-range, had a resonance at 90, and the crossover just flat didn't work. Why? Because its impedance goes up to 17 ohms at 90 hertz. So in order for the crossover to work, the passive crossover. Now, if you have an active crossover, you just ignore all this. You can just dial it whatever you want. It all works. You don't have to do any of this. You need a consistent impedance in the region that you're crossing over. So I built the network, and then I tested it again. And you can see it does pretty good, enough so that the crossover functioned. Like, not exactly like the prototype, but nearly. Now, the trouble with cascaded filters, where you've got the mid-range and you want to roll off the low end, the high end, and make a bandpass filter, you follow those equations, you follow the recommended part values back here. These are designed to have an amplifier on this side, zero output impedance, and a driver on this side with some known impedance. You stack two of those. You stack a high-pass filter with another filter, a low-pass filter behind it to make a mid-range filter. And guess what? The first one, filter works the way it should. The second filter doesn't, because it doesn't. It's no longer hooked to an amplifier. So that just ends up with stuff like this. If the filter worked perfectly, it would just go up, across, and back down. That would be what you'd want, right? But because this effect, you get these extra characteristics in here.
Did you discover any topologies that didn't have that, like any series or anything like that? How did they get around that?
I mean,
that's a series kind of a problem, but...
Yeah, and so what you do is you let it adjust. So there are parameters, there are values for the coils and capacitors, and probably a resistor you need to throw in there. But it's not the textbook values. So this is where the optimizer comes in. So going through the other features of this, this is the directivity, basically how wide the thing plays versus frequency. So if it was always at 0 dB, it would be an omnidirectional speaker. So this is all prediction for the speaker I designed. And so the interesting thing is it shows that, yeah, in bass it's omnidirectional. And then you get up here to the mid-range, and it's pretty good. It's pretty consistent. So for whatever reason, the size of the... This has to do with the diameter of the driver and the frequency range you play it in. It's the directivity. And so over the range in that I was really interested in having constant directivity, which was, what do we say, 500 to 7,000, it's actually pretty good. It starts to go a little directional as we get upwards, because the tweeter, I mean, you're into the tweeter, and the tweeter, it's 1 inch, and it's got that characteristic of a 1 inch driver. You're not going to get around.
Does that mean, like, if it gets up to where 12 is horizontal move there, that it's 12 dB stronger on axis than it is at some degree off? Is that what that's
something
saying?
Like that. I don't know the precise definition of this, but it's indicating that the energy is going forward and it's not going to the sides. It's getting a smaller and smaller cone,
right.
Effectively. But, yeah. And so this is showing one of the deficiencies of the design I have. This is basically like the max SPL. So when the cones are moving at their X maxes, and you can see, boy, I get a lot of bass, I get a lot of mid-range, and then, oh man, I don't have enough tweeters. So if you really wanted to make a better balanced speaker that would get higher SPL, you'd go throw some more tweeters at this to get, because you'd want to be up, you know, you really want to use all of the woofers, 105 dBs, which are nice. Boy, those things really go, and mid-range really goes. We just need more tweeters or, yeah.
Was that tweeter 79 dB, 1 watt in? Was that the...
It's really low. Yeah, it's really low. And ultimately, I don't know, I think this is because it's a 5 watt device. I think basically it's hitting 5 watts there, and that's all you can put into it before it starts to give away its essence.
Its vital essence?
Yeah.
What was the last slide? What was the frame called, or what was that function called that was comparing the outputs of the drivers?
Oh, this one.
Yeah.
So this is the max SPL in main direction for linear excursion and max power load.
Okay.
Yeah. And this was like input voltage. Anyway, I don't care. Somebody else may care. This was directivity. So this is you know, as you go, let's see, directions, listener, different angles to the left. So the top curve is straight on, and then as you go out to the left, you get these other curves, and you can start to see some things. This is to the right. So if the baffle, you know, so having these off center, you should have different responses. And this is vertically, because I've got this array here, I'm going to get a lot of things going on. I don't know how accurate these are, but anyway. And this is all just modeling, all software modeling. And then this was the response of each driver. So this is kind of cool. So you can go in and say, here is the mid-range. Here's the driver. If it was just by itself, here is with the baffle is the blue. So you can see the baffle has some effect in the cabinet, I think. And then here is with the crossover. So I lose some power because of my crossover inefficiencies, but so that's ultimately what it's adding to the system is that. And then this was the impedance, I think, of the driver. And so this is for the tweeters. And, alrighty, optimization. So, parts selected for optimization appear in red. I think those are them. So what you do is you say, hey, I want this particular filter. I know this is a Linkwitz fourth order filter that's operating where I want it to. If you just go in here and say, go ahead and adjust those however you want, all of a sudden it will optimize to make a flat response of the system, but it doesn't respect the boundaries you set for your crossovers. It doesn't, there's no input to say, I still want a 700 hertz crossover, and it's all of a sudden it starts letting the woofer go to a kilohertz and the tweeter go to 5 hertz and stuff like that. So you want to select parts that adjust the things you want adjusted, or that you have parts in your box that you can change. And this is the optimization screen. It's made to be, I guess, relatively simple.
Brilliant or English?
Yeah. So. And so these are the weights of the different. Yeah, these are the weights of the different criteria. And so it's interesting. If you tell it you don't care if you have a short circuit, it'll go build one with a short circuit, baby. It'll be a really flat speaker, but it'll have 1 ohm input impedance.
And this is an English program.
Yes. There you go.
It's German. Is it not German?
Oh, it's German.
Oh, it's German.
That's what it is. I think you're right. I think it's German. Yeah. Deutschland über alles. Okay. I finally said something offensive in the political season. I can fit in.
So English equals dull.
Yeah. And so when you fire this thing off, it gives you rankings for each of the criteria and then a total judgment. And so you can see, like, frequency response of this thing's terrible. A good frequency response might have a number that's 2. Something like that would be a really relatively flat in this criteria. And so what you'll see then, it'll plot these as it runs, and it goes click, click, click. And if it's able to, the lines trend down until it can't do anymore, and then it says, I'm done. And so it's really a very helpful thing. This I think you guys have already seen. I stole this from Radio Shack Science Fair. Let's use springs to hook things up. There you go. I won, so that's why you're listening to me. Actually, when I took it to the contest, I didn't get the plastic pipe put on yet. So somehow it was good enough even with the diffraction there. So it's and the crossover sort of working. And then you go, hey, these speakers look kind of familiar. Well, you know, Edison apparently designed the woofer box when he invented the phone, and these guys at Grim Audio make a speaker looks an awful lot like mine before I did. It's just embarrassing. There it is. Thank you very much. Cool.
Did having the contest in a children's classroom put the judges in a better mood?
Yeah, especially having the ark in the background, the whale. Yeah. And now, just to show you, here's the list of the tools. It's in the back of the slide deck, the bill of materials on the speaker, some references. So this is all on the slide deck. So if you pull it off the website, you'll be able to see all of that, like I said.
So is the measured or graphed frequency response of this a little heavy on the bottom end, a little light on the top?
Yes. Yeah. The ultimately, the woofers are very efficient. So, the trouble is they're like a 2.6 ohm woofer. So then you go, okay, what am I going to do to that? And if I'm going to put a 1 ohm 100 watt resistor in series with these to pat them down, and I just gave up. So, but obviously if with an active crossover, they get knocked down 5-6 dB and thing would sound better. But at home they're horrendous. Out in a big room like this is pretty good.